This is the OTB Television Network, a service of Capital District Off-Track Betting.
Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning and welcome to Racing Across America on this Saturday morning. I'm Seth Merrow. Thanks for joining us. Thanks also to our friends at Gulfstream Park. Gulfstream Park, champions start here. Do want to also alert you that it is a fan appreciation day today at the Lansingburg branch. If you're a patron over there, stop by between noon and 5 so we can say thank you to you. There'll be a contest, food and beverage. First 50 folks through the door get some items that you will appreciate, and we appreciate you. The Lansingburg branch today, noon until 5, Fan Appreciation Day. All right, on today's show, we're going to talk some three-year-olds, Derby Trail. A little bit later on, Gary West will join us. He'll go over his current Derby Top 20, talk a little of the stakes action that's coming up this weekend. And a similar scenario with our first guest. It's Jeremy Plonk, Countdown to the Crown, horseplayernow.com, and much, much more. Jeremy, good morning.
Hey, some people think it is Countdown to the Clown when I come on, so you never know. A Freudian slip of the tongue, but no, it's good to be with you, Seth, as always. And what a great weekend for racing, right? Let's play two, as Ernie Banks used to say. Not one, but two risen stars this week.
A couple of risen stars, also out in Northern California, the El Camino Real. We'll hit on that also, but I wanted to go back and do a little review of things. And before we get back to last weekend, I wanted to go to yesterday. I didn't pull up the replay, but Governor Morris made the return, or as he's called, Gouverneur Morris. I just think it's an old-timey spelling. I still think you say Governor Morris, but I'll go with whatever. But you have him number 16 on your top 20. That was obviously before the race yesterday. Mm-hmm. What were your impressions of the Governor Morris return? And it was a kind of a what has become a Todd Pletcher MO over the past few years. He's used races this time of year over Tampa to get a start for some of his horses. John Velasquez makes a cross-state trip to get it done. And he won by, I didn't see the chart, but I was guessing about a length and a half or so. But yeah. What was your impression of Governor Morris?
Really good. A professional win. Cassie's Untitled was a good-looking horse who, you know, was well-represented and well-bet in the swale. So he took on a good challenger in that race. And it was a deeper race than you'd expect for a short field at Tampa this time of year, especially with a big-name player coming back off the bench like that. So good race. Got exactly what he needed out of it. And he's onward and upward now. And really, as far as the timing goes, you know, he's in a projected path to get two shots here yet, like everyone else. You know, if you're running this weekend, you've got one or two preps left, and he's in that spot. So really good return. He's going to move up from that 16 to be sure. I think he's one of the ones. Good second to Maxfield. You know how close I follow Keeneland in the fall. Maxfield's two-year-old performance at the Breeders' Futurity last year was one of the best I've seen from a two-year-old stakes horse at Keeneland in all the years I've been working there. And Governor Morris had a horrible post position that day in the Breeders' Futurity and still ran a good second. That tipped him off as he's probably, you know, one of the better horses of the crop. And his comeback race did not disappoint, I don't think. And, you know, you said Todd's M.O. going over to Tampa, that's for sure. And also starting his two-year-olds into their three-year-old season later and some of these first-time starters later. Ever since the success of Always Dreaming a couple years ago, you can visibly see it in the running lines. Fletcher's three-year-olds are starting later and later. He realizes the importance of getting a race or two into them and getting to the Derby. Instead of having those great two-year-old resumes and those long campaigns on the Triple Crown Trail and racking up graded stakes wins, Fletcher's taken a different path the past couple years after his success, and Governor Morris is one of those. He's got a couple of them this weekend. I mean, we really haven't seen Todd in the big stakes yet, you know, and this is where it's going to start to change. He's going to be in every one of them from here out practically.
Yeah, I mean, over the years, he's been a guy who on the Derby trail you could really count on. But as you say, he's kind of changed up the way he approaches it a little bit. And so that appearance on the Derby trail is going to show up maybe a little bit later this year.
Yes, and I think it's going to be a strong one. He's had a good bubbling undercurrent there at Gulfstream. A lot of those allowance, bait, and special type winners looking for a place to go. He's gone to Tampa a couple times with horses that have run well. Farmington Road ran well over at Tampa. And got a victory. Now he just got the other one with Governor Morris. He is going to be ready to play. He's got a horse from the Remsen who finished third. He's coming back in the Southwest on Monday at Oaklawn. So it's going to be his time. If it's been quiet the first month and a half of the season here for Fletcher, the next month and a half, I think you're going to get a full dose.
Yeah, looking forward to it as the Derby trail ramps up. And again, we'll talk about some of today's action in a few, but still wanted to go back. We were out in Vegas last weekend covering the National Horse Players Championship. Had a lot of fun out there, but that meant we really didn't get to dig into some of the stakes action last week. So I thought we'd take that opportunity with you, at least on the three-year-old scene. Mm-hmm. We'll start things out. We'll look at the stretch run to the Sam Davis. Obviously, all eyes on Independence Hall, the number four horse at 3-5. Gets out, takes the lead late in the race, but then gets run down by Sol Volante, who I had Ellis Starr on while we were out in Vegas, and he likes Sol Volante, so hats off to Ellis there. Horse that came in with a stakes win in the Pulpit and a third in the Mucho Macho Man, but around two turns Tampa and the Sam Davis really appreciated that. So I think he now moves up on a lot of folks' lists. Sol Volante over Independence Hall and Ajaweed running third in here. What were your thoughts coming out of the Sam Davis?
Visually impressive. You know, the winner came through the wire nice. He was reaching out well. He looked like he was finishing strong. And on the clock, he was. You know, he got a good number late and, came home in a fast fraction. So a visually impressive race. But it's a mile and 16th and it had a sprinter's pace to it. You know, from here out, we go to a mile and an eighth pretty much, and we get rid of some of that sprint pace, and we get more kind of route horses, and the sprinters are kind of gone on the Triple Crown Trail, obviously, by the time we get to Churchill. So that race absolutely set up. I mean, they went blazingly fast. Second quarter goes faster than the first. Almost every time you see that, it sets up for a closer. That's just a general rule of thumb, whether you're playing Beulah Park or you're playing, Beulah's not around anymore, whether you're playing Mahoning Valley. Or you're playing the Kentucky Derby. When the second quarter goes faster than the first, it usually favors come-from-behind horses with a chance to really uncork their move, and that worked in this case, of course, Sol Volante. He looked good doing it, Seth. I just wonder how far he'll go, and can he close like that over a sustained distance with a pace that's a little bit different? You know, his pedigree is all-miler. He's got the Great Mies. You remember the Great Mies, the filly who won the Breeders' Cup mile on turf a couple times. She's in the top part of the pedigree and the bottom part of the pedigree. A lot of the Arcos family blood in Sol Volante. And, of course, the sire is Caraconte, who won the Breeders' Cup mile on turf. Just reminds me a lot of a turf miler. Now, obviously, the horse can run on dirt, but that kind of style, that 2-3 furlong, beautiful kick, devastating turn of foot that we like to use that term, I think Sol Volante possesses those type of qualities. That doesn't necessarily win a mile and a quarter if you're looking for a Derby horse, and in what is the Derby pace isn't what it used to be and things like that, but a talented horse that Bian Cohn has back on the trail. And as for Independence Hall, the question will be out in terms of distance. That third kind of got a beautiful trip. It was fast, sitting third behind Fast Practice, but when two speedballs are going in front of you and they collapse and you inherit the lead, you know, 5/16 of a mile out, you're odds on. You're supposed to win that race. And he didn't. So the question will become distance. That was his first two-turn bid, and he'll get another shot, I would bet, against him. But could he run, you know, thirds in a couple nice preps yet by the end of the season, seconds or thirds, Independence Hall, and make the Derby and be one of the 20 best of the crop by May? I don't think that's out of the question. But for folks who had him in the top five, I think Independence Hall is not a top five horse any longer.
Yeah, I might have gotten exposed a little bit. As opposed to that Nashua, which jumped off the page with the triple-digit buyer, the comeback, and the Jerome, the number went back a little bit. And so maybe got exposed a little bit. But again, it was his first around two turns, and I'll always kind of forgive that as an educational endeavor. And so, as you say, I'll give him one more chance to take a look at him. And Sol Volante, I alluded to it. They have whatever they want to do in the future, because, as I said, he won the Pulpit earlier in his career. That was on the turf, the first two races on the turf, both wins. And then he moved over to the dirt and the Mucho Macho Man, so now a third and a win on the dirt. And he came into the Sam Davis with a bullet work on at Palmetto's on the turf. So
yeah.
All options are open. But you're
in June, the Penn National Mile, yeah. I think it's worth about $500,000 or something like that for just three-year-olds going a mile. He's like 1-5 in the future book for that one if they want to go that route. I think he could really be sharp in something like that. But that's after the Derby. So you could try to make him a Derby horse first, obviously. I mean, they're only 3-1.
Yeah, you got to have a good three-year-old. You got to try the dirt at this time of year, and you have success in the Sam Davis. They will go forward, but all options are open for a horse like that. All right, let's go over to the West Coast. As I say, Sol Volante moved on a lot of people's lists after the win in the Sam Davis, but it was very similar coming out of this San Vicente. Nadal moved on to a lot of lists as well. He came into this off a debut maiden breaker. Nadal is going to be the number 4 horse as we watch the stretch run of the San Vicente. Ginobili, the number 6, runs second. Fast Enough runs third, but Nadal, Bob Baffert trainee, again, pretty impressive winning the debut. And then he follows it up, chart margin of 3/4 of a length as the 30-cent to a dollar favorite. What were your thoughts on Nadal coming out of the San Vicente?
He's absolutely brilliant. How far he'll go, will he be able to harness the speed? Those are the questions that are still to be found out. But when you duel in 44 flat over a Santa Anita surface that has not been rocket ship fast at all, in fact, it's slow, it was a little faster last weekend, but not to this degree. I mean, these two horses, Ginobili and Nadal, really threw it down and went fast. But then they walked home. You know, when you're high 38.50, I believe it was, for the last 3 furlongs of a 7-furlong race, 38.50, for example, is about what you want to see, if not a little quicker, for the last 3 furlongs of the Wood Memorial when they go 9 furlongs at the end of the campaign. So just comparing races, shape, this looks like nothing else that he'll see the rest of the Triple Crown season. He's not going to go 44 flat ever again in one of these two-turn races. It'll be 46-47. And then how does he finish up when he goes a little bit easier in the first half? That's a question. How does he finish up when he does 2 lead changes, too? That's the difference, you know. It's not just 1 turn versus 2 turns. But remember, the horses lead with their left leg, then they go to their right leg. And when they do 2 different lead changes in a race, you don't know how a horse is going to react in their stamina, too. So that's always a question mark. If next for Nadal will be, you know, probably the mile and a 16th Rebel at Oaklawn. The first turn of that race is going to come up much faster than it did here at 7 furlongs. Remember, at 7 furlongs here in the San Vicente, it was a long, straight, 3-furlong-plus run into the only turn of the race. At a mile and 16th at Oaklawn, it comes up on a much, 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 much quicker. And so how does a horse react? First time having to turn left, almost, you know, a quarter mile or less out of the starting gate and eighth of a mile or so out of the starting gate, and all of a sudden they're making a left-hand turn. Do they get it back? Do they switch back to their proper lead, going down the backstretch and go on? There's a lot that still has to happen for this horse, but his talent is obviously evident, and anybody backing him at this point has to be excited. He is one of the most brilliant horses in the crop. The next question will answer a lot of it, and the Rebel will be a tough test. Free Technique and other horses like that awaiting the Rebel and sitting out Monday Southwest. So that will be a good field in the Rebel, we know for sure.
Yeah, and I see he jumped into your top 10 off of that victory.
Yeah, Nadal, yeah. I mean, and he's there, you know. I mean, he's the talent. Baffert is very high on him. And Bob, when he's bullish on a horse, he's pretty right. I think he's one of the ones. But again, the next race will be very telling for him. And you'll know if you have a Derby horse or not in the Rebel. I mean, I think it'll be abundantly clear. You'll either know for sure that this is a brilliant sprinter who can't do the 2-turn mile and a quarter kind of thing, or he's going to look really good in the Rebel, and you go, okay, this is kind of a Curlin-type brilliant horse who's just really rocketing here and Justify from a couple years ago. Next one tells everything, and he gets a road trip, right? He's only ever run, you know, out of the home stall there, walking across to the track to run. Now how will he handle a road trip, a bigger field size probably? You'll know everything you need to know about this all after the Rebel, and he'll either be up from number 9 or off a list.
All right. As they say, he jumped into your top 10 at number 9, but maybe more impressive, off a maiden victory last weekend. Spa City moves into the number 7 position, and so I wanted to talk about that horse as well. And again, this is going back to last weekend, maiden special event down at Gulfstream, going a mile and an eighth. This was career start number three for Spa City. It's Kieran, it's Godolphin. First time around two turns, Spa City's going to be the number eight horse here. Went off as the second choice at 2-1. Again, this was a good-looking performance around two turns. Kieran, Godolphin, you have notable names there. But that this horse jumped from a maiden special weight event into number seven on your list says a lot. Give us your thoughts coming out of this win by Spa City.
Well, he's got a great pedigree. His mama, Sarah Louise, was a really good mare, you know, and top horse in New York, of course, and folks who followed her career know that she had a lot of talent. This horse ran a good second to Cara Caro prior to this at Gulfstream prior to this and showed the one-turn brilliance and now gets to go the two turns. And really, this is an impressive reach out to the wire. 37 and change the last three furlongs of this race. That is so impressive. You know, we talked about, 38.50 for the last three furlongs of the San Vicente. This is a mile and an eighth. And Seth, I went back and looked up the mile and an eighth race using the BetMix database. Mile and an eighth races at Gulfstream for maiden and allowance horses. I only found 17 of them going back the last 7 years to 2013. Out of those 17 race winners in the maiden and allowance ranks going a mile and an eighth at Gulfstream, among those included Always Dreaming, Orb, Totalist, three horses who won Triple Crown races. Throw in Commissioner, and I think Made from Lucky was the other one that was of major significance and a major race winner. I mean, these races have been very productive. And when you get one that's productive and fast, it's not like he loped along 152 to win a mile and an eighth race that nobody was running in. This was very impressive. And I predict that Spa City will win one of the major preps here before we get to the Kentucky Derby. The Bluegrass would make a ton of sense. You know, Kieran McLaughlin being a Lexington guy supports the Oaklawn meet in the spring. A little bit of a late, maiden break to this one. I really think that Spa City is going to make a dent here. And I really wanted him in our Triple Crown Media Fantasy League Thursday night that we had. And I had him as my second horse on the board that I wanted to get. I had the number three overall pick, so I took Dennis's moment. It was too much to take him at number three, obviously. But by the time the draft wrapped back around to me, I had number 27. And Jay Privman took him, I think, at 25, two spots before me. So I was licking my wounds because I really thought I was going to get him with the second pick. I didn't think anybody would dive in that early. But Privman beat me to the punch.
Well, at least there's still the opportunity to bet on him.
That's it. That's the most important part. But, you know, sometimes that fantasy league comes down to the Belmont. It's helped my betting in the last couple of years because I'm alive to a nice score in the fantasy league if this happens, and I can wager the other direction if this happens. I've actually used the fantasy league to hedge my bets at the Belmont the last 2 years, interestingly enough.
Very good. Spa City comes out of that race with a solid 91 buyer, so a very nice performance there. And as I say, I wanted to talk about that because I actually heard you talking about the horse on the BIC radio show this week as well, and so wanted to touch on it because, as I say, it bounced right into your top 10 off of that maiden victory. Let's look forward a little bit, and if folks want full coverage of the stakes action coming up, always go to Countdown to the Crown, horseplayernow.com and whatnot, and pull up the weekly Countdown to the Crown write-up. Again, every Friday it comes out. Jeremy does a great job, both previews and reviews all the three-year-old action. And just, again, inform people, Jeremy, who may be curious, a little bit different this year in that really Countdown to the Crown, it's not just Friday. You're all week now with information.
Yeah, Brian Spencer and I do a podcast on Monday that gives a quick reaction to the weekend, some opinions of that. And then on Tuesday, all the written reports come out for the maiden and allowance races in January and February. And, of course, all the stakes races throughout the trail. Those are now released on Tuesday. Instead of just being lumped into one big report on Friday, trying to get with the times and get the information out a little quicker and more digestible to folks. So Monday, Tuesday, and then on Friday, we release the report that has all the weekend. And we include the stakes recaps there in case anybody wants them, just kind of have them all together. But the Friday then includes the top 20. And for the first time this year, it's our 15th year doing the Countdown to the Crown. So we are ranking the 15th best three-year-olds I've scouted during the course of these last 15 seasons. This week it was number 9, Bernardini, and we'll come back with top eight, so we're almost getting halfway through that top 15 countdown.
Yeah, I'm going down. Looking at Lucky Orb, Nyquist, Rags to Riches, Bodemeister. I'll have another Bernardini. Looking forward to getting to that top three and seeing mostly if I agree.
I bet we'll hit the same number one.
All right, let's jump in and take a look at the two from Fairgrounds. Again, they're split divisions of the Risen Star, but we're also going to take a look at the El Camino Real from Golden Gate. And again, the full write-up over at Countdown to the Crown. But we'll get your ideas this morning. I think between the two split divisions, race number 12, the first division, probably is the saltier and more interesting of the two. Digital and Blackberry Wine are both coming out of a nice optional claimer that was actually won on the same day as the LeCompte in a faster time. So it's going to be interesting to see where the betting public goes. We have the top three coming out of the LeCompte, and we're going to take a look at the stretch run of that. Stretch run of the LeCompte features number 10, Enforceable Winning, number 9, Silver State running second, and number 2, Mr. Monomoy running third. They're all back on Saturday in the Risen Star. Farmington Road comes in for Todd Pletcher and is perhaps a little bit interesting as well. What are your thoughts in Division 1 of the Risen Star?
Well, the mile and an eighth is a big difference. You know, the LeCompte rematch, 5 of the top 6 are back, and then you got those two winners at the meet that win a mile and a 16th. But a mile and an eighth is a different ballgame. And, you know, the pace should be a little bit slower to mile and an eighth than we see in mile and a 16th races. You don't have the sprinters sticking around here like you do in the shorter races. And so other than Sha-Sha Shake Me Up, who was part of the pace in the LeCompte coming back, there's not a lot of new pace injection into this race. Maybe Ready to Roll from Oaklawn for Calhoun shows a little bit of pace. But I think they'll go slower early here than they did in the LeCompte for sure. And so we might not get the same finish. And I think that a horse who's more forwardly placed than Enforceable may have a chance to turn the tables. I went with Mr. Monomoy because I thought that he ran a good race that day. He only in the LeCompte, he was up near the pace. He was chasing a quicker pace with sprinters in front of him. I don't think he's going to have that same kind of setup in this race. I think he'll go slower. And the gallop out was really good for Mr. Monomoy in that race. He galloped out really head-to-head with Enforceable into the clubhouse turn. So I don't think he got tired. I think it's one of those where a horse with momentum came up, wound past him. He's down on the inside, and you know, and he gets caught. It happens. But I don't think he was necessarily gassed and giving it up. Of course, he's the half the Monomoy girl, and there's plenty of pedigree there to think the class could carry to the mile and an eighth. So I like Mr. Monomoy to change the order of finish, perhaps, from the LeCompte. I think the distance and the difference in pace this time could be the differences there. But I love that win by Blackberry Wine and Digital and the runner-up. I can see either one of those two horses factoring in here. We don't see a lot of horses step up in the maiden allowance rank have success in the Risen Star over the years. In fact, you got to go back to 2004, a horse named Grade Point for Neil Howard, the fine one who won the Risen Star on the local class prize. So lean to the LeCompte horses and try to, you know, find the best horse at the best price is always the best way to recommend gambling. And in this case, you know, I liked Enforceable in that race. I thought with a couple sprinters in there that it could set up for his close. We caught him at 6-1 that day. You know, that helped. But now you're going to catch him at 3-1 probably in a different pace scenario. I think he's a pass this time. He could win, but from a gambling standpoint, I think you try to beat Enforceable if you can. I'm going to try to do it with Mr. Bonapoint.
Yeah, and I've kind of been on Mr. Monomoy from the beginning of the career, and I'm waiting a little bit for that breakthrough moment, and I think it potentially can come. He may be primed. And as you mentioned, sibling to Monomoy Girl, and folks may look at the auction price and think, well, how'd they pay $60,000 for a sibling? And I every time I handicap the horse on our afternoon handicapping show, I remind people, that was November 2017. He was a weanling. That was before Monomoy Girl was Monomoy Girl. But these are the same connections. They all knew they had Monomoy Girl, and so they jumped in and got the sibling. But don't let the auction price fool you. I mean, this is going to be a talented horse one way or the other.
Yeah, and I think he's just in the right spot here today. I just think that this sets up nicely for him, and this is the time. You know, every horse has their day, and, you know, that mile and eighth is a big difference here, and we get a mile and 3/16 in the Louisiana Derby. They extended both distances this year, so there's going to be probably even less speed in the Louisiana Derby next time. So, like, Enforceable's best race shape, even though he's a deep closer, his best race shape may have been the LeCompte amongst this series. We'll see, but he's a good horse, Enforceable. He's got a tremendous pedigree out of a Blue Hen mare, Just Whistle Dixie, and in good hands with Mark Cassidy, right? I mean, which guy's going for three straight Triple Crown race wins? It's Mark Cassidy, and he won this race last year with War of Will, his eventual Preakness winner. And War of Will was coming out of a win as well in the LeCompte. He doubled down in those two. So Enforceable's in the right hands. He's got a big shot in here. But I think you're going to get half the price you got last time with a tougher pace scenario. So I think it's a bet against. But if he wins, there'll be, you know, I mean, he's a top 10, 12 kind of horse right now in my rankings and certainly belongs. I mean, he could win this race for sure. But as a gambler, if he wins at 3-1, you can have him. If you're playing a multi-race ticket where you're not really worried about the win prices, you absolutely use him. You know, I'm talking about gambling on a win play. I would bet against him. But in a multi-race wager, I would use Enforceable and Mr. Monomoy and try to get through this race with two.
Sounds good. Let's move on to race number 13, the second division of the Risen Star. As I say, the first division to me is a little bit saltier, but this is still interesting. And O Dior coming out of the second place finish in the La Salle Futurity behind Thousand Words, who subsequently won the Bob Lewis for Bob Baffert. That horse will clearly take the action, and deservedly so for Blaine Wright. We're going to take a look at La Salle Futurity. Again, it'll be Thousand Words winning and O'Dior running a close-up second. But also in this race, Finnick the Fierce coming out of a fourth-place finish in the LeCompte. The interesting horse to me, though, is the Brett Calhoun runner, Mailman Money. Leaves from the 11, 2-for-2 so far in the career, including a nice optional claimer win right here at the Fairgrounds last time out in a pretty solid effort. Liam's Lucky Charm may be also interesting coming over off a decent number win in the Pasco at Tampa. What are your thoughts on the second division of the Risen Star?
Yeah, this is all the shippers, right? I mean, a lot of the out-of-towners are in this race where the first leg is pretty much all the LeCompte attorneys. You know, and O'Dor is going to be the horse to beat without a doubt. Joel Rosario comes into riding, picks up the mount for the first time. They add Blinkers and Rosario. So they're not messing around in the three-year-old debut. And this is a horse who ran into December in the Low South Futurity. So it's not like you're really coming off any kind of layoff. He might have got a week off training or whatever or so after the race, and it's been right back in all winter long for Blaine Wright. You know, Blaine got another twist of fate last year through the Preakness Stakes and the Triple Crown. So he's gotten a taste of the trail and a horse who's run well there. He kind of knows a little bit more what to do, what not to do this second time around. And I think this is really good placement. This is a smart move. And this is a horse who, like you say, well, am I on an eighth this early in the year? You know, that kind of thing like that. This is a horse who's run three routes. He started him on the turf going a mile because he knew he was a route horse and he needed a race of distance. Nothing on the main track going two turns for a two-year-old at Golden Gate. So they got that turf mile to go, and he just, you know, showed how talented he was against those kind of runners. And then in the Breeders' Cup ran a really good race. I know it was a slow Breeders' Cup, and Storm the Court disappointed on the comeback, and that race hasn't come back strong. But his race against Thousand Words validated he's one of the top, you know, 6, 8, 10, however you want to split him up. He's one of the ones to keep an eye on. But again, Rosario and Blinkers for this first race back in the road trip, that just tells me they're really serious about this. And, you know, look, it's Blaine Wright and his barn. They don't get many chances to run for 400,000, you know, in a grade two. So this is a big deal to them. This isn't like Fletcher or somebody like that who, you know, well, we're just making sure we get to May, that sort of thing. So I think O'Dor is going to be ready to run a big race, and I think Will. I think he's going to be probably too good for these. But Mailman Money is very talented. But the post position that you mentioned is a negative out of the 11 hole, no question about that. And the fact, you know, we talked about, we haven't seen many allowance and maiden risers have success in this race over the years, and that was when it was a mile to 16th. Now it's a mile to 8th, so it's even a little bit more challenging. I like Mailman Money a lot. If anybody beats the favorite in here, I think he will be the one. And if he is the one to overcome the 11 hole, to stretch out from a mile 70 to a mile and an 8th, and to beat a proven two-turn grade one kind of horse, he's the favorite for the Louisiana Derby and the horse to beat, I think, if Mailman Money can pull this off today. He's got a big shot. He's a very talented horse. I like him a lot. I was thinking about pulling the trigger and making him the top pick because of the price difference. You know, fair odds on this horse, though, with everything that's being asked of him, this field size from out there, fair odds are probably 10-1, and I don't think you're going to get that. I think he's going to be quite a bit shorter than that. I think he's going to be somewhere around third choice, maybe. And if that's the case, then Mailman Money's probably 5-6-1. and he's probably a bit of an underlay with the task at hand. But if he wins this today, he is a horse to be reckoned with.
I think you're right on the odds. I think he's going to take some action. He's going to be the one that folks are going to kind of lean towards as an option in here. Because, as I say, I thought the other division was a little bit saltier, and so he becomes interesting in this second division. All right, let's go out to Northern California and get an idea on their three-year-old stake on Saturday afternoon, the El Camino Real Derby, $100,000 up for grabs for the three-year-olds going a mile and an eighth. Sacred Rider, a little bit interesting, being based out in Northern California, so has experience over the track, but does come in off a little stakes, state-bred stakes race. Good second place finish down at Santa Anita most recently. Azul Coast will take a lot of action. Why? It's Bob Baffert, a horse coming in off a second place finish in the Sham last time. But reading your write-up on Countdown to the Crown, I see you like Checkmate, and so I thought we'd take a look at this one's maiden breaker from Keeneland last October. That was when the horse was last seen. Has subsequently moved barns from Rudy Brissett to Richard Baltus out in Southern California. This was the second career start. The debut was at Ellis Park. It was a fourth place finish. Followed it up with this win at Keeneland. And again, Checkmate is the number eight horse getting it done here. Subsequently out in Southern California, pretty good little string of workouts underneath. Give us your thought in the El Camino Real.
Well, Richie Baltus is going hell's bells out in California right now. I mean, he's the hottest trainer at Santa Anita, bar none, since the turn of 2020 here. And his horses are all running really well. Checkmate is by street sense, of course, a Kentucky Derby winner and a Breeders' Cup Juvenile winner. So there's win early in the pedigree, obviously, there. But then you look at street sense, since he's gone to become a sire, he's getting 21% winners with horses running on the Sapita at Golden Gate Field. The pedigree play here, even with Checkmate, because you don't know how a lot of these horses, you don't know how Azul Coast and some of the others will fare back to the Zapita, who haven't run on it before. But Checkmate seems to have the pedigree lean in there, and I'm going to give him a shot. It's not a very good post position. I don't know what kind of speed will be in this race. It doesn't look blisteringly fast. Again, we're at a mile and an eighth, so the locals who are like the sprint sort that ran in like the Golden Rush or the Gold Rush and the Golden Nugget and races like that, they're really not even around anymore for this one. So I don't think the pace is going to be very fast. So he showed speed at Keeneland. You know, he's able to go 47 and change to the half. He may be able to overcome that post by simply being a little quicker than some of the others, being fresh, too, off the layoff. His works are good, but a fresh horse usually shows a little bit more speed than their running line suggests. So I think Check might be able to overcome this post because there's not a lot of other speed in the race, and so I don't think he's going to lose that much ground into the first turn going the mile and an eighth there at Golden Gate. He's the choice. Azul Coast, you have to respect for sure. I mean, Baffert had last year's second-place finisher in the El Camino Real Derby. He took Kingley up there and ran second, so he's making a return trip up there. He doesn't send many to Northern California, but Bob's got so many, and, you know, he's got those going to Oaklawn. He's got two already for the San Felipe lined up. He's got to find places for some of these horses to run, and this looks like a good spot for Azul Coast because he's a horse who works well in the morning, looks like he might be, you know, more brilliant than he is, but then on race day, he just kind of doesn't have much speed, and he comes with a little bit of a run. His late first pace figures have been decent. Got a 93 in the Sham. You know, he was a distant second to Authentic. The curious thing here is, you know, we talked with Blaine Wright of having the favorite going on the road for the Risen Star Stakes. And, you know, his horse would have been, what, 1-5, 1-9 in this race if he would have stayed home. So that kind of shows his bullishness to go on the road today with the favorite in the Risen Star, instead of staying home and just taking an easy paycheck and a workout in the El Camino Real Derby. They've got bigger plans for that runner, and I think you'll see that. But I'll take Checkmate in the El Camino Real, and, you know, what can we get on him? You know, if we got 7-2, I'd be pretty happy.
Yeah, 6-1 on the morning line. That should come down a little bit, though. Yeah, 7-2 seems reasonable there. And this is the kind of race that's also interesting to see what the next move is. Do you try dirt, go back to dirt for some of these, or do you head to Turfway and go for their rich race on the synthetic? It's always interesting to see the horses coming out of Golden Gate and where they choose to go.
Yeah, the timing works well to go to that Jeff Ruby at Turfway in March. And so, yeah, that opens the door to that. You know, it kind of makes a logical step if you want to go that direction. And if not, with horses like, you know, Checkmate and Azul Coast, then maybe something like the Gotham, you know, something back on the main track might fit well on class and distance. And so those would be like logical spots. Sunland Derby would be a logical spot from here based on the timing and the level of competition you might face. So you've got two or three options coming out of this race for those horses if they're good enough.
And just before we let you go, Jeremy, again, I'm looking at your top 20 from Countdown to the Crown, and your number one, Tis the Law. I had talked to Jack Knowlton just before the nice win down in Florida, and at that point they were thinking, yeah, we'll go the funny side route and we'll go over to the Louisiana Derby. And he thought it'd be interesting this year also at a mile and 3/16. But with the big win over the Gulfstream track, it took him about 24 hours to say, you know what, I think we're going to stick in Florida with Tis the Law.
Yeah, I think it's the right move. I mean, you know, funny side was trying to find his way, improve his way, and that sort of thing like that. This horse is there. You're the big man on campus. You come out of your home stall, you go over there and take care of business, in the Florida Derby. I think that makes a lot more sense. Calendar-wise, if you would happen to miss the Florida Derby, then you still have the Wood, you know, so it's not like you're pushing your eggs too far into one basket. If something were to happen, you know, along the way, you miss a little time or something like that, then you just bring him back from the Wood, you know, a week later, and he's lined up pretty well on time, too. So gives him some good options, and Tis the Law is a really, really serious horse. I think he's, you know, he's the leader of the division and the horse you've got to beat. Dennis's Moment worked this morning. Honor AP out in California is one of those that I think is among the most talented, but he has done absolutely nothing on the track since October. So he's got to get back into San Felipe and just come back kind of like I'll Have Another came back 2 years ago when he won the Lewis, you know, come off the bench and just show that he's made this big leap forward from 2 to 3, and he's as brilliant as we think. He could do that in the San Felipe, but that will be a tough race with Authentic and others from Baffert in there. I think Thousand Words also going. So you might get Authentic, Thousand Words, and Honor AP all in the San Felipe, and whew, what a race that'll be.
Yeah, looking forward to moving along the Derby trail and having some more conversation with you. Appreciated the conversation this morning. Again, folks can check out Countdown to the Crown, which is all week now. Good information available, so recommended to check that out. Jeremy, again, appreciate the visit. We will talk again.
Take care, everybody. Good luck today.
Jeremy Plant, Countdown to the Crown, horseplayernow.com, and much, much more. We'll take a break. When we come back, we will be joined by Gary West. We'll talk a little bit about his Derby Top 20 and get some of his thoughts, fairgrounds, and also look out perhaps to the Holiday Monday card at Oaklawn, which has another nice 3-year-old stake. All of that right after this. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Albany County, an incredible destination to live, work, and play, with easy connections to more than a dozen cities from our vibrant modern airport. It's a short trip downtown to a hive of culture and amusement, from world-class shows at the newly renovated Times Union Center to reliving the past at the New York State Museum. From outdoor recreation to shopping to nightlife, Albany County has something for everyone. We'll see you soon.
Wagering on horse racing just got a lot easier at Capital OTB with our newly designed state-of-the-art mobile wagering site. Everything you need is right here on one easy-to-navigate mobile platform. Set your favorite tracks, pick your horses, place your bets, all with a simple tap of the screen. Plus, you'll have access to Capital OTB TV for all our network programming. So log on to CapitalOTBBet.com and see just how easy wagering on horse racing can be.
Visit Rivers Casino and Resort, the Capital Region's only destination for live table game action and the hottest new slots paying out millions. And they're off. Horse betting is now at Rivers Casino and Resort with Capital off-track betting terminals and live tellers located just off the gaming floor at Van Slick's. Get in on all the action at Rivers Casino and Resort.
Welcome back to Racing Across America on this Saturday morning. Happy to be joined now by our friend Gary West. Gary, good morning.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
Very good. And I said at the top of the show, we'll talk about your Derby Top 20, and I'll alert people if you go over to Equidaily, you'll find a link there to Gary's current Top 20. He's doing a weekly Derby 20, and we'll get some thoughts on that and also some thoughts on some of the stakes action for the three-year-olds coming up over the next few days on this holiday weekend. But let's jump right in. Your Derby 20, I'm going to pull up and take a look at the Iroquois last September from Churchill Downs. It's going to be the number eight, Dennis's Moment, getting it done for Dale Romans. We talked to Dale, I want to say early January maybe. Dennis's Moment had just gotten kind of started, maybe had a work or two already, and Dale was happy. Subsequently, some pretty regular works since then, but hasn't been seen since the ill-fated try in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, so hasn't made that three-year-old debut yet, but you have Dennis's Moment number one on your list. Give us some thoughts about why the number one position.
Well, his two races last year where he was victorious were nothing less than sensational. In the other two races, he just could not outrun Misfortune, as in the Breeders' Cup where he stumbled at the break. But based on those two races and the assumption, and, of course, you have to do that when you're looking ahead to May and these young, improving horses, and the assumption that he improves, as most horses do, he potentially is going to be the horse to beat in the Derby if he makes that progress. And his last two workouts down in Florida certainly suggest he's moving forward, and Dale Romans indicates that he's very pleased with the horse. He worked 5/8 and 58 and change, came back with a minute and change. So he's got that aim on the Fountain of Youth, which will be run at the end of this month. And if Dennis's Moment runs in that race as expected, he will join Tis the Law as one of the favorites for the Derby. Tis the Law is a big race of the Holy Bull. I thought was sensational. He ran the fourth quarter mile in 24 and change and drew clear to win by three, overcame a little trouble. He was a little eager the early stages of that race to be expected in his first race of the year, but he's looking very good, and Tis the Law will come back in the Florida Derby. And I think those two right now are the top two on my list, and I expect big things from both of them.
Let me ask you this. You know, we just watched that stretch run from the Iroquois. Does that play in your thinking at all to get the bonus of a horse that's already not only had a race over the track, but a win over at the track at Churchill Downs?
Well, it does give you some confidence because, as you know, some horses go to Churchill and just don't handle that surface for whatever reason. And Bill Romans is based there. This horse is trained there. So that does give you some added confidence, right?
Yeah, and Tis the Law, of course, a race over the track as well. And I said coming out of that race for Tis the Law at Churchill, I was giving him a pass there. First time around two turns and off track, some traffic trouble, and he came back and kind of validated my thoughts with his performance in the Holy Bull. We're going to take a look at that. Tis the Law is going to be the number three horse here. Wins by a chart margin of three lengths in his three-year-old debut. As you say, he's number two on your list. To me, he's pretty solid, and I said earlier, we had talked to his owner, Jack Knowlton, before this victory, and they were kind of planning to come out of this and take the funny side route to the Louisiana Derby. But I laughed. I was talking to Jeremy Plonk earlier. I laughed and I said, it took him about 24 hours to kind of figure out, hey, we had a big win over the track and we're based here. I think we'll stick in Florida. And that seems to be, to me, probably the right move.
Yeah, that makes sense. A lot of sense to stay there, and he ran an outstanding race. You know, he was in tight in the backstretch, and that probably worked to his advantage the long term, and that forced him to meet out some of that natural talent he has and to settle behind horses. So I like Tis the Law, but as you point out, his one bad race was at Churchill Downs, and we've seen horses in the past like Skipaway who just didn't like Churchill, so that's a little bit of a concern, and if all things equal, I would have to favor a horse like Dennis's Moment that we know can handle Churchill and likes Churchill.
Let me just go down the list a little bit and bring up, because we talked a little bit earlier about two stakes winners from last weekend, and you have them fairly high on your list. Nadal coming out of Southern California, the win last weekend, and Sol Vellante, the win down at Tampa Bay Downs. They're sitting on your list now at 4 and 6 after the performances last weekend. Talk about those two a little bit.
Well, Nadal was just dazzling when he won the San Vicente. You know, he went the opening half mile with Ginobili in 44 and change, 44 flat actually, 44.09 I think it was. And when you see a horse do that and then finish with some, I think, determination, that is just incredible, especially for a horse making only his second start. So I was very impressed with him. He's a great, big, powerful horse, obviously a fast horse. I spoke with Baffert after that race, in fact, just a few days ago, and Bob Baffert said, you'll never have to run that fast again. He doesn't see any problem getting this horse to stretch out and control that speed. So he's going to come here to Oaklawn Park. I'm at Oaklawn right now for the Rebel Stakes on March 14th. And he looks like he could be one of Bob's outstanding horses, maybe his next superstar. Very exciting horse, 2 for 2, both fast races. Now, the final time for the San Vicente, you know, wasn't eye-popping. But, again, after going 44 flat for the opening half, they did a lot of running there. You wouldn't anticipate them to finish much faster than they did. Sole Vellante, I was so impressed with his Sam Davis. You know, I like his Holy Bull, raced a little wide there, close to ground on what is that? Let's face it, a speed-favoring surface. Goes to Tampa Bay. He was tractable, rallied, ran the second half mile in 47 and change. I think he went the third quarter in 23 and change, the fourth quarter in 24 and change. He ran around the turn so effectively. And this is a horse who's very athletic, a beautiful mover. And I think his pedigree might be a little underrated because he's by a Breeders' Cup mile winner. So you're inclined to think turf. And maybe not distance, but if you look around a little bit in his pedigree, he's out of a full sister to an Epsom Oaks winner. He himself is a half brother to, half brother to a horse that won a Canadian Derby at a mile and a quarter. Sole Vellante, I think, is a very exciting horse, and I'm eager to see what happens to him down the road.
Yeah, he certainly attracted a lot of attention after that, both of those, Nadal and Sol Vellante, after the wins last weekend. And I just want to touch on one other before we move on. On your list, number 16, Governor Morris. This list came out earlier this week. He won his 3-year-old debut yesterday. What were your thoughts on the return effort from Governor Morris?
You know, you had to be happy with that. It wasn't a real fast race because of the track was very fast. I know they were just off the track record for a mile and 40, but the track was playing very fast. And I'm guessing the number will come out of that race around, I don't know, 88, 90, somewhere around there. So it wasn't
91.
91, okay. Yeah. So it wasn't the kind of race that's going to, you know, just jump off the page at you if you're looking at it on paper. But if you go back and watch this race, this horse was in a drive. It's a 3-8 pull because Untitled was loose on the lead. It looked to be running very easily. In the turn, I couldn't imagine Untitled getting beat because, you know, he's just cruising along there, and Governor Morris is in a drive. But he sustained that drive, and that's most impressive for a young horse like this to sustain a drive for 3/8 of a mile and then gallop out strongly. I was very impressed with Governor Morris, and I expect more big things from him. That was a great way to kick off the year for him.
All right, let's get some thoughts on the two divisions of the Risen Star at Fairgrounds. And as you say, you're over at Oaklawn and coming up on the holiday Monday, the Southwest. Let's start in Division One, which, again, I think is the saltier of the two divisions. Race number 12, Division One. A little bit earlier, Gary, we took a look at the LeCompte. You have the first three finishers in that race coming back. Blackberry Wine coming out of the optional claimer that was run the same day in a faster time is interesting, as is Digital, who was right behind Blackberry Wine. But I wanted to pull up, while we talk, the Tampa Bay Maiden Breaker for Farmington Road. I just thought that Todd Pletcher elects to come over with this one was a little bit interesting. Farmington Road will be the number 3 in here, winning at 20 cents to the dollar by a chart margin of 1 3/4 lengths. So that horse, as I say, a little bit interesting as well. This is a fun race. What are your thoughts in the first division of the Risen Star?
It's a very competitive race. It's, I think, much deeper than the second division. although it lacks the, you know, the star power perhaps of the second division, but much deeper in talent. Farmington Road, I agree, is very interesting. He and Governor Morris have worked together in Florida. And Governor Morris stays in Florida to run at Tampa Bay in an allowance race. And this horse shows up in the Risen Star. Read into that what you will. Farmington Road, after working in company with Governor Morris, came back, 6 days later on February 8th, and worked in company with Coach Rocks. You're probably familiar with her.
Sure.
A 5-year-old mare has made about $500,000. So I think Farmington Road is a very, very intriguing horse here. And I certainly wouldn't leave him off of any ticket. Silver State is a horse I've been waiting to see pop a big one, but he always finds a way to get beat. He's a huge horse, a big horse who is not, you know, athletic enough and nimble enough to avoid trouble or squeeze his way out of trouble. And so he's been in tight spots where he's just been unable to extricate himself from difficulty. And I think that's why he lost the second start of his career. He got bumped around there leaving the gate. And in his last race, he had trouble absolutely from the break to the finish. He didn't break well, ends up wide, has to check. I mean, he was all over the place and finished, a length and a half behind Enforceable, who's also in this race and raced very wide in that race and came running. I'm talking about the comp now. So Silver State ran second in that race. Enforceable won it with a wide trip. I like both of those horses a great deal. Blackberry Wine, as you point out, ran that same day and ran a little faster. He went 43-1. The other, the LeComp went 43-3. And if you look at the splits, though, they might tell a rather different story because Blackberry Wine was allowed to get away with a very casual pace, 48 and change on the front end. The LeComp went a full second faster for the opening half mile. So he didn't finish nearly as well as they finished in the LeComp. But he got away with a very, very easy lead and casual fraction. So now we see what happens when he's got to run a little bit on the front end. And he's going to have to today because Digital draws the rail. Digital has some speed. And I think some others in here have a little gas. Keith DeSormo horse has some speed. So we'll see what happens here with Blackberry Wine. If he can take more pace pressure and still be there at the finish, that'll be interesting. But it's a very, very intriguing race. I like the race a great deal, giving Silver State and Farmington Road the edge here.
Yeah, I agree. I think between the two, as I say, I think it's the saltier of the two additions. Division II of the Risen Star. Let's get some thoughts there. And earlier we took a look at the Los Al Futurity because Anno Diora will certainly take some action off of that second place finish to 1,000 Words, who came back to win the Bob Lewis. But I talked earlier about Mailman Money, 2 for 2 so far for Brett Calhoun, and we'll pull up and take a look at the allowance optional claimer from January 12th down at the Fairgrounds. Number 9 will be Mailman Money, and off of that, he's going to take a little bit of action in here as well. What are your thoughts on this second division of the Risen Star?
Well, as you point out, the horse to beat, and is what she's 2 photo finishes away from being the champion, I suppose. He gets beat a neck in the Los Al Futurity and ahead in the Breeders' Cup. And now he gets Blinkers and he gets Rosario, who's a strong rider. I think he's strictly the one to beat. Mailman Money, I really like this horse because I think his performances were somewhat unexpected. He didn't look to be very precocious. Then he brings his debut and he comes back around 2 turns. That bald face comes, rolling at you down the lane, and just a beautiful horse. And when he won that optional race at the Fairgrounds, galloped out very strongly, suggesting the mile and eighth might be just what he's looking for. I was disappointed he drew the outside here. He's number 11, but he doesn't have a great deal of speed, so they'll just take back, I think, and make a run with him. But I knew yours, the horse to beat, absolutely. I think in this race, an intriguing horse is Liam's Lucky Charm. He was chasing Chancet down in Florida, and got away from him to win at Tampa Bay when he was able to control the pace going 7/8 of a mile. He is, I think, easily the quickest of this group and is going to control the pace here. And if they let him get away, he could be very dangerous.
Yeah. Again, I think this is a fun race, as is the first division. And I think some contenders clearly will come out of the fairgrounds. But on Monday, let's shift attention to Oaklawn Park and the Southwest. A nice field entered in that Grade 3 event. $750,000 up for grabs, a mile and a 16th, the trip. Chase Tracker coming in for Todd Pletcher, interesting. Jeremiah Englehart has Villainous. We have some horses coming out of the Smarty Jones, and I pulled up the Smarty Jones. It's going to be number 6, Gold Street, getting it done for Steve Asmussen. 3 Technique for Jeremiah runs second. Shoplifted runs third in here, and we have Gold Street and Shoplifted coming back on Monday. I liked Shoplifted in here. Steve Asmussen, after the race, said it kind of, the way the track was playing, played to Gold Street. So I may stick with Shoplifted before I give up, try to jump on him one more time for Asmussen. But what are your thoughts in Monday Southwest?
Well, I like Shoplifted as well. Obviously a capable horse. And if you like him, you have to like Answer In. Finished in a photo with Shoplifted at Remington Park. And Answer In that day, I thought, had a tough trip and may have been best in that race. But two very good horses. Castellano's coming in to ride Answer In, which I found to be very interesting that he's sticking with this horse. And another interesting horse is Silver Prospector, who ran fourth in the Smarty Jones. And the track that day, it was off. Gold Street won. Gold Street has won, 3 consecutive races on off racetrack. He obviously loves an off track, a wet track. Silver Prospector was far back on a speed-favoring surface and just could not make up the ground. I'm willing to give him a pass on that one. And I think Silver Prospector, I'm looking for an improved performance. So I like Answer In, Silver Prospector, Shoplifted in there.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a fun race coming up on Monday. And you say you're at Oaklawn. For folks, I'm envious. I had one chance to get down to Oaklawn. I really like the track. Can't wait to get back there at some point. But for folks up in our area who may be thinking about making track trips or whatnot and are considering Oaklawn, would you consider Oaklawn? To me, the track, the town, the fan base, fairly similar to Saratoga.
You know, I was just going to mention that, to compare it to a track perhaps your viewers are more familiar with, because the atmosphere here is very much like the atmosphere at Saratoga in the summer, because everyone here is focused on racing. You go have breakfast and people want to know who you like in the double. Everyone here is here for the races, and it's a very, very exciting atmosphere, and it's a festive occasion this season, and the purses have become exorbitant, and so the racing, I think, better than ever. And we're going to see some great horses run here at Oaklawn this season. And I would certainly urge anyone who wants to go have some fun at the races to give Oaklawn Park some consideration. And you know, they draw huge crowds here, just like Saratoga. Huge crowds every weekend. People waiting in line to get through the doors, and it's fun and it's great to see people love racing the way they do here at Oaklawn Park.
Yeah, as they say, very similar to the atmosphere at Saratoga. When I'm in here doing the handicapping show, I'll look up at the monitor and they'll have that shot of the apron and it's full of people, and that just makes the experience very special. Gary, just before we let you go, again, the top 10, the Derby top 20 you put out through Thoroughbred News Service, and also you had a recent article talking a little bit about Bob Baffert and kind of on the cusp of Derby history, as it were, as compared to Ben Jones. And I'm just looking at the article, and you compare it really to some of the top records in all of sports, what Ben Jones did with the Kentucky Derbies. But Bob Baffert kind of sitting on the cusp of maybe besting Ben Jones.
Yes, it's possible. He has 5 Derby wins. Ben Jones won 6. And that has been the infrangible record for horse racing. It stood up there 68 years, and I can remember years ago thinking nobody's ever going to win 6 Derbies. That's impossible, particularly now, because it is so difficult to win a Kentucky Derby now. The Kentucky Derby has become such an event. It is a focal point for all of racing. This is the race everyone knows, everyone points to. Unlike the Derby, frankly, when Ben Jones was training, yes, it was a celebrated race, a glorious race, but it was not the sporting event, the cultural event that it has become today. And also, when Ben Jones won his six Derbies from, 38 to 1952, the average foal crop was about 6,000. The average foal crop during Baffert's tenure, or rather his 5 years of winning the Derby, his five Derbies, has been 30,000. So it's a much more competitive situation. And just, the average field size when Ben Jones won the Derby was 13. And of course, now we just know there's going to be 20 in the starting gate every year. So it's, I think, much more difficult to win the Derby now than it was when Ben Jones did it. Not to diminish his accomplishment. As I said, I never thought anybody would win six Derbies. Bob Baffert might.
And a couple of Triple Crowns, and it is quite a resume that we're alive to be racing fans to enjoy. So, yeah, very notable. Gary, as always, appreciate the visit and the conversation, the thoughts on the weekend. Certainly, we will check in again.
Great. My pleasure, always.
Gary West, as he says, live from Oak Lawn, where not only the Southwest on Monday, they have a really nice stakes card on Monday. We'll talk about that, and we'll be in actually with the Holiday OTB Live on Monday as well, taking a look at that card. So looking forward to that. All right, we'll wrap it up. Gary West, a little bit earlier, Jeremy Plonk. We concentrated on Derby talk, Derby trail talk, with some nice prep races or Derby trail stakes races, Fairgrounds, Golden Gate. Monday at Oak Lawn. Also, there's a three-year-old stake, the Miracle Wood at Laurel this weekend as well. So a lot of great three-year-old action coming up on the weekend as we are in the midst of that Derby trail action. It's always exciting year in and year out. So appreciate our guests this morning. Also want to remind you once again, Fan Appreciation Day at the Lansingburg branch. That happens between noon and 5. First 50 folks through the door get some items, bet voucher and program and whatnot, food and beverage for everybody during the day. There's a contest. Should be a lot of fun. Give us our chance to say thank you to you. Lansingburg branch today, noon until 5. Again, we've already alluded to it. Monday's a holiday, so there'll be some nice racing. Some of the venues that aren't normally open on Monday. Keep that, mark that on your calendar as well coming up on Monday. Thanks to our friends at Gulfstream for their sponsorship. Gulfstream Park, champions. Start here, and I'm just looking the new graphics from Gulfstream Park. I like it. They've kind of redone their whole graphics package over the past month or so with really the new look on the simulcast signal and whatnot, and it bled right over to our promo graphic there as well. All right, we'll wrap it up for this edition of Racing Across America. Back in tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. for some stakes recaps and more. I may reach out to Nancy Holthus tomorrow to talk a little more Oak Lawn and maybe take a look at all of the Monday stakes. But we will firm that up as the day progresses. Regardless of who is in, it'll be a fun Racing Across America tomorrow at 10 a.m. So tune in then. As far as today, back in about an hour and a half or so with OTB Live for a Saturday afternoon. We will see you then.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off Track Betting.